time for perf bites.
What the f*** is perf bites?
The fourth square meal.
Don't bogart the perf bites.
Fuck waffles.
Add nutritional value to your brain.
Perf bites.
Whatever.
Hello, everybody. That video took a while to loop off, right?
Yeah, it was. And then suddenly I was asking myself, but this music reminds me of something. And then I was trying to find the movie. It reminded me of a movie.
Oh, a suspense one?
Yeah, I don't know.
Gotta be a suspense one. It's a little bit like, we're going to have a better counter next time.
but where is the perf bite introduction? It's completely missing. Gosh.
Well, for everyone that is watching right now, we are a little bit freestyling today, watching, listening, whatever, are you catching this perfect episode, where it has been a while. We have been out for a little bit, right?
We've been lazy. We've been on the not working anymore and doing non-cool stuff. And I don't know. No, we've been busy.
Quite the opposite, right? We have been crazy busy. And it has been a while since we haven't brought any perfights action to our friends online or followers or podcast listeners. And we were thinking like, yeah, let's bring it back. Let's start to do some things. We have several friends that would love to come and talk about their experiences around performance, around observability, tuning, borderline SRE, chaos. There are so many things that are intersecting with performance testing, and I'm a little bit afraid of saying that performance is in the middle of this Venn diagram that has intersections for other specialties, that it may be diluted among all of them. I don't know. What do you think, Henrik? What have you been seeing?
Yeah, it really depends where you're based. I mean, it could be dev and a pure dev activity or task. It could be an SRE. It could be in part of the SRE approach. It's almost...
the traditional QA areas. Now we have user experience, because it's also another intersection that we have with performance, at least web performance, web browsers, chaos, SRE, ops. We have a lot of intersection with ops. What else could it be?
Ops. I mean, ops, I think it's always been a challenging piece, because we usually not touch so much on production. I mean, if we do synthetic, we can do that, but on the upside, we try to avoid. But yeah, we prepare for the D-Day, I would say, but not necessarily changing the production environment.
Yeah, what do you mean D-Day? What's going on?
It's just that when you have a release or something.
Come on, but we have D-Days every other week now, right?
Every second hours, that's why. Mm-hmm. It's not a D-Day anymore, it's a minute day.
It's another day.
Oh, gosh. Things have changed.
Yeah, we are having also several changes around the technologies. One other one that gets me big time is this decoupling of our applications. They are not anymore the single box that we used to slam directly. Many times I don't even know where actually is what I am hitting, or if it's located in the same place. Like one application may not be in the same place, may not be being taken care of by the same team. It's elasticity. That's another one that adds up to a lot of this evolution that we are having in performance nowadays.
Yeah, but still, I think even if things have changed, if you take the auto-scaling approach, or if you're taking I'm implementing feeder flags, or I'm implementing observability and I'm adding in libraries that will potentially send more package to the backend, and at the end, more package, more traffic coming in, there is potentially performance problems behind the scenes. So I think it's super useful. But it's just that the people in charge, as you mentioned, it's different roles, different people, different objectives compared to what we used to have a few years back, for sure. And also one thing that also, I mean, I don't know for you, but the last few months, I mean, being interacting more with the cloud native community, I see the toolings for performance is not the same anymore. I mean, they are, but I see less J meter from my end. J meter is like
we see a sudden appearance.
Oh.
Oh, Mr. James. Okay, Mr. James. We have you in video. Welcome, amigo. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, welcome back. We have Perfite's almost full house today. It's very good to see you, amigo James.
It's good to see the two of you as well.
Did you finish your pool in the background? Now you can actually take benefit of that?
I just wanted to work by the pool today. It's getting warmer and it's a beautiful day out. And here I am stuck on a conference call.
Perfiting. James, what's wrong with you? I can't believe it. amigo, welcome. We were just touching on some differences, some points and changes that we have noticed. Like we have not been perfiting too much lately. And since some things have changed, we were sharing some of the things that we have been seeing. Henrik, please go on. You were sharing a little bit on.
Yeah, I was mentioning that from the discussion I had recently, I don't see anymore so much J meter. I don't see much Gatling around me. There are obviously a couple of vendor solutions that has been mentioned, but less than in the past. I see lots more locusts in the environment. I see also lots of K6. K6 is very picking up the market for sure. So I think that the marking, I mean, I think it depends on which technology you're dealing and you're working on. But I think even the tools are transitioning because the practices wanted to do simpler things so they don't need the same type of tools to achieve the test they are trying to run.
I think there the applications, their evolution, and this decoupling that we were mentioning earlier with the services and microservices that they are based on. How many of you have recorded and replayed a script like we used to several years ago lately? I mean,
I didn't record anymore.
it's been a while, right? How about you, amigo James?
Oh, no, I'm still dealing with end-to-end business applications. So I still have a lot of recording going on to build the scripts.
What's up with the weird green hand that appeared next to you? Sorry for anyone listening. James just had a weird green hand appearing behind him. It was a little bit spooky.
I've got a green screen behind me in addition to the projection for the pool, so it's probably causing a little bit of overlay challenges.
Okay, yeah, it was interesting. There was a green hand behind him, like, James, look out behind you. Yeah, there's a hand. Again.
This is the hand.
that is very odd. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Back to what we were saying. Have you been dealing still with record and replay end to end?
I have. I've got a lot of customers who have historic applications. You think of .NET and things of that nature that are still being migrated to the cloud. So as a complement, I do a lot of cloud migration business. So there is a lot of still question of how is it going to perform in the cloud. Now, what I see going away is this issue of, oh, well, let's test the old application to find out what it does. Instead, APM is really replacing that information set. Instead of running a performance test in the old system, you're now taking advantage of an APM solution to collect that data, to organize that data, and that forms the basis for the expectation in the cloud. I see a lot more cloud tuning work going on, either a mild cloud optimization as someone moves to the cloud. Not so much making things cloud native if they're older, but new applications becoming cloud native and not just for a single cloud provider, but being able to run on-prem with Kubernetes or in a cloud provider or in some hybrid model. And I'm hearing a lot of customers talk about repatriation because of cloud costs.
Huh. So this sounds to me a little bit like they did an account of their probably not awesome performance, and they just threw everything into the cloud, thinking that it will solve everything, which probably does. But
oh, you know, the cloud, it has unlimited resources and everything like that. But
the unlimited,
unlimited is expensive.
Uh-huh.
When you've got a really promiscuous app in terms of resources. And that's where those mild cloud optimization efforts are going on. And then if the application just is not performant, oftentimes rolling back into a hybrid cloud or a private cloud inside of an organization, and then the replacement becoming more of a cloud native solution.
But it's funny because I had a discussion that was a few days ago with Eduardo Silva, who is the founder of Linbit and a company called Calyptia. And he mentioned system needs to be efficient and performant. And he said it's similar to cars. You can have really a powerful engine that allow you to go very, very fast on the road, but it's going to be very expensive because you need lots of power to make it run. Lots of fuel, lots of gas to make it to get the right destination. So today, I think we are looking for a balance between I want speed, but without consuming too much resources. I want to have a green IT in my environment. I want to have a non-expensive application to manage in production.
Yeah, but we're not allowed to run diesel software.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you saying something in between a Hummer and a Prius?
It's almost like a Tesla where you don't have to recharge so much.
Yeah, I don't know where to take that analogy with the Tesla, because also like you are defacing, you need to charge it, but that electricity is still coming from.
How about a diesel hybrid?
That could
diesel
be
hybrid.
Another solution.
For hydrogen cars.
And that's very interesting, because we are now seeing so many alternatives to what you say, James, old end-to-end kind of monolithic applications that are pushed into the cloud. That's one mix. We're seeing the ones that are microservices, the ones that are super distributed, Internet of Things that connect among each other. And I mean, it's a Wild West out there now, not so much as the dominant thing that we used to have to do was just recording the web browser, this thing. Maybe you were unlucky to have these weird protocols like Citrix or, I don't know, remote desktop connections. But nowadays there are so many other components behind that we didn't even have access to those, right? We didn't even know what was behind that Citrix. But it's interesting because to the point that you said, James, most of this traditional performance that we were doing, it's also one that our means of observability, observability, were our automations. And nowadays we have so many better options and tooling and standards, new standards coming. I am super excited of what OpenTelemetry is doing. What benefits we will get, that we are not locked up to just script. And that's the only thing or the only way that we can know the performance, which I think it's a huge improvement, right?
It definitely is. And I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do earlier in the life cycle, not just as a dedicated performance effort, but being able to use OpenTelemetry to find the out of scale components or statistical outliers during unit testing and functional.
Imagine this software that is being created with OpenTelemetry standards that you can know what is the performance at the developer's machine. It's reporting already, right?
Yeah, but I think what is exciting is because OpenTelemetry is just is the standard format. Is that now we have a standard format that we exchange. And remember, a few years back, we still had the notion of APM, where we were able to collect data from New Relic or from Dynatrace or whatever. But you had to create that custom code that will connect, get the data that was obviously structured in a different way, and then process the data. And now with that standard format, it's exciting because now we can invest as a community, as performer, to extract the data from any solutions in OpenTMG format, or get the data from a collector, OpenTMG collector, and then start to process and recognize patterns that help us to test or figure out what we should test, what we should focus on. I mean, I think we're just reaching the first part of the value of OpenTelemetry, and I'm pretty excited to see the next piece where we're going to utilize the data to bring value to our organization. I mean, it's similar to the human being. When our brain make decision, it needs to observe the environment with the eyes, with the ears, by touching. And it's the same thing. Now we have the data to observe our systems, and now we can make decisions out of that. So that's I'm super excited about that.
It's bringing an analogy to what you were saying reminded me a little bit of the days of that you had to choose in between VHS, Betamax, or if your TV was PAL, NSTC, all those formats, or the port hell that we had in the 90s. And now it's just like USB, everything. I mean, nowadays we are doing pretty much everything with USB, charging, data, video, whatever you want. And I think we may be getting to that point in terms of observability that, yeah, just get your whatever plugin you have for consuming OpenTelemetry data. Your application, your application doesn't have that by default? What's wrong with you? Some of those things that I think we're getting to, and that will be incredibly exciting because performance, not only testing, but knowing it will be just like, yeah, I know everything in my system. Mm-hmm.
And also, I just had a discussion with a large bank in Australia, and they are now asking their providers that provides components or applications, saying, if you wanna, they don't want the provider to say, hey, I'm gonna ship you an agent or whatever. Now we say, hey, now we have a common format. So you produced traces. And then, which means everyone can take advantage. The provider is getting those traces. The customer is getting the end-to-end trace from everything. So I think it's just open doors.
Hmm. What do you think, amigo James?
I think there is still a weakness in our profession. We've concentrated so much on collecting time, you know, the observability stack. How much time does something take? A lot of our tools are still weak on collecting the actual metrics of the operating system and gluing that together with time on a common time scale. Now, we've got two examples here that have gone beyond that. You're looking at Dynatrace, where we're looking at observability for both time and resource measurements inside of the system on a common time scale. And on your side, Leandro, there's some solutions for making that observability. But we're not getting our engineers in the field who are using tools that are unitaskers to actually glue these data sets together on a common basis. And those of us who've used historic performance testing tools understand the value that resource measurements drive how the system performs. But so many of the other individuals who have not benefited from training or mentoring only know performance testing tools for collecting time. And that has dramatically impacted our value to the organization. We still have an issue on compensation for performance. There is a need in the market, but compensation is lagging even versus an SDET. An SDET is considered more valuable than a performance tester in many organizations. And until we can improve our value overall, which is really the mission of PerfBytes, we're going to struggle, particularly in our value to the business.
I think that situation is because the role of the performance engineer became, when I ask anyone performance engineer, they think of a scripter, someone that just, as you say, records, executes, grabs time metrics. You're right. You made me think of some of the tools that we used to use in the past, that we had the capability to connect to the backend, check hardware metrics. At times it was a bit complicated to get those metrics. I won't deny permissions, access, and all that. But it's something that nowadays it was just like, yeah, you just do your scripts and gather response times. What's the big deal in that, right?
I interviewed some people today who expressed expertise in classic tools, like LoadRunner, Rational Performance Tester. And they saw no difference in capability between that and a JMeter or a Grinder. They were not using the monitoring or the analysis capabilities of the tools. They were only using them as load throwers. And I think that's to our detriment that we're not using the full tool capabilities.
Yeah, but I think nowadays, most of the observer platform has the ability to ingest. So if all the load platforms are pushing the data that they're able to produce from a test and then match it to the other metrics that they're collecting on the observer backend, then you can do so much analysis and so much time saving. So I think the market is shifting more and more to that direction, where I just need to have something hitting heavily the systems, and of course making sure that this application also pushing the metrics to the observer solution, and then you spend your time analyzing. But yeah, I agree, James. People I have seen when I was still working for Neotis, a lot of people were just doing hammering and then doing the analysis with other tools.
I think that there's another one with now the cloud. Hey, our amigo Scott Moore is saying hi. Hola, hey. Amigo Scott. Good to see you. You should come soon. Yeah, let's have Scott here with us soon.
Guys, I need to drop because I have another meeting. So I will.
Busy Perfighters, but we will have more Hendrik soon.
All right. Enjoy the show, guys.
Hendrik, have a great evening and great weekend.
Take care, Thanks. Amigo Hendrik.
Bye.
So going back to this point, amigo James, it's really interesting because I think that also what has taken out of perspective some of these situations is this movement into the cloud. Why do we care if about hardware metrics or these statistics on CPUs, RAM, or how it's spanning?
It's the almighty
cloud, right?
Ah, but here's where we have a really high value proposition for true performance engineering, not just someone who pushes a button and runs a test, is that your bill in the cloud is directly tied to how you use resources. So this is one of the very few times where performance is directly tied to financial operations, and you can see it in the cloud. You can imagine someone switching a Lambda function, as an example, from Python to C, same function, but the resource cost and the energy cost associated with C is substantially different than Python, and worth hiring the C programmer to convert the Python algorithm inside of Lambda, because you're going to be charged for every single instance of that. And there is a point at which it's cheaper to use a microscale instance to run your code than it is to do in Lambda. And someone has to be watching all of that. Sometimes it's the chief financial officer who screams after a couple of months of bills, but it really should be the performance engineer to say, hey, it's more efficient to move these three functions over to a micro instance rather than keeping them in Lambda. It's more efficient to convert this algorithm from Java to Rust or to C to make it more resource efficient. And you can actually measure your benefit in the bill that comes due at the end of each month. And this is really a fantastic place to be from an industry perspective. But the big question remains, can we capture that opportunity and really improve our value as a profession overall to the business, to the executive team? I know in my organization, we even offer what's called value-based pricing. And Leandro, I think you've seen an example of this, where we will do work and our compensation is directly tied either to the improvement of your bills or to the improvement in your conversion if you're an e-commerce shop. So you don't have to pay us anything up front. And if we don't get you a 5% benefit or better, you don't have to pay us anything at all. And that's directly to attack this value proposition that performance engineers only build scripts, run tests, and give reports.
Yeah, there has been significant changes as well with the cloud. It's, as you mentioned, a big difference. Yesterday, I was having a discussion with not an actual performer that considers himself a performer, but I was doing like some advocacy. Hey, performers, we need more people. We need more skills and bring them. And he was asking like, hey, what is this? I was running some things with Grindr and then some JMeter, but I got into a situation where my bosses told me, what is the cost of your tests? Because when you are running your tests, it costs us in our cloud environments. And it's like, oh, what do you do on those? And you hit it very well. Like, put on an environment, not a Lambda, put something like not elastic, not stretchable. Because you want to find the limits or define well what you are trying to figure out of your test and not just try to slam it just because. We have always had this issue, right?
Yeah, I know I can run 100,000 user tests in AWS using, I'll call them out, Neoload right now for about $50 an hour.
Mm-hmm. And if because that's the other one. It's like, I'm just going to, did you ever face like, 1,000 users with in 5 minutes doing what? Why do you want to do 1,000? Oh, just because performance, right? What are you chasing here? And what it's going to cost you. And in the old days, it costed us, but we were not that aware of the price of the environment. Yeah, mm-hmm. We need to buy a test environment. That was a cost that we...
Now that cost has significantly shifted with the ability to use pipelines to stand up the environment in the cloud, run the test and tear it down, where you can have an exact scale replica and you only have it for a very short window of time. That is fantastic. That observation you just had about running the 1,000 users for 10 minutes, you know, that makes for a great performance unit test. But there's so many of those tests that I see even today that disrespect the nature of client server, the model, where the client server model anticipates that you're going to have delays between requests from each user, during which time the resources are available to be used by other users or other sessions, almost like a Tetris game. You know, you drop a block, and that block is there, and then you drop another block, and you kind of you're starting to fill in your resource pool, and then some of those blocks go away, and you free them up, things of that nature. But they're not all coincident; they don't all occur at once like that. 1,000 users for 10 minutes, where no think time is in place, and they're just crushing the system. It's like, okay, so you've stress tested this one component, but what does that tell you compared with a user community? It's hard to make that jump when the behavioral model is so different. Now, clearly for a web service, you know, this is not a bad test, but for end-to-end, it's really bad.
It depends as well, because when you were saying this, I thought of, but as you say, end-to-end, all the mixes of steps and all the requests that we have to do. And I've seen some organizations that, yeah, it's a valid test. Let's say if you are in the pipeline, you just need to quickly run something and compare to previous metrics. But at times I have seen some of this just, I call it performance just because. They are executing that same automation in a pipeline. And in that release, probably is not even the module that the script or the automation is running on. The changes that they are releasing in that sprint or whatever that pipeline is having to do with. And I have found like, hey, why are you running that? Because it's a performance test in the pipeline. Yeah, but you're not releasing anything that touches it at all. Why? No, it's... and some of this understanding of what we are doing, yep. I think as well, I cannot say that it's a modern thing. I saw 10 years ago some loadrunner scripts with no think time and just run with very random numbers or
It's an artifact of our development model for our industry. We have very few people that actually go through training and mentoring. Most people are socially promoted into this field because there's a need to have someone do it. Say, hey, go do it. And that then results in all of this uneven set of knowledge and skills and capabilities, and in the end, value being delivered to the end customer.
I mean, putting skills and knowledge aside, which I think in Perfvites is what we are trying to explain and help everyone to get better in those situations. But there's another one where you put a finger on something that in modern times, we are having this setup integrating through a pipeline and leave it running, where you made a very good point. This is almost some of our performance and load tests are tailor suited. How can we mix and match into this pipeline that needs to just leave it run and let it go to the test that, yeah, we have to do something. Hey, now we have a Taylor Swift concert. It's not the same thing that we're going to have in the pipeline, that we need to run something different and probably sprint by sprint be changing, right?
Yeah, it's hard to match that Taylor Swift concert scenario, especially since, you know, unless you're going to buy a Russian botnet for a couple of hours. Something that we could address in the pipeline is still not being addressed effectively is this question of, does it scale for one? Oh. And when you have observability and you have that ability to ask associated with each functional test that's running, are we meeting our qualifiers for response time, for responsiveness, not even more so than response time, that issue of, is it, you know, is DOM interactive within, you know, 100 milliseconds or 500 milliseconds, something of that nature, to gather all of those statistics. And if we can show that we're meeting the pipeline goals for a single user for performance, if we have a low risk deployment, we might just skip the multi-user performance test in that case, because we've addressed about 80% of our risk right there. Any, you know, missing indexes, things of that nature would all show up for one user. Bad page design. Since Scott Moore is on, you know, we have to talk about the 45 megabyte image file on the front page. You know, all of those things would show up just asking questions for a single user. And then that becomes a great gateway that if you don't meet the qualifiers for a single user in the pipeline, you don't even run the multi-user test. You back it out and say, okay, you got to fix this. Or if you do meet it, then you have a decision tree of what is the risk of this release? Is it a .01 release? Are we matching the response times of the previous release that we had a known good on? So you could have an actual very, very low risk, and you might take a canary path in that case. You know, the ironic, let's roll it out to New Zealand and see how the Hobbits use it and see if it works. And if that works, then we'll roll it to New York. And if that works, then we'll roll it out globally type of thing. Versus actually going through a performance test in the pipeline. So, I mean, we have a lot more options certainly available to us these days. And we have a lot more technology. We just need to figure out how to work it more effectively, I think.
I love that perspective. And I am apologizing. I have been quoting you like crazy with that. If it scales for one, that's the first step that you should be taking care of before you think of anything else performance. And it's something that, and you just mentioned, right? This is scale for one in the pipeline. Should we care about that it keeps scaling for one afterwards, synthetic or some other methodologies?
And sure, that becomes a KPI across the entire life cycle of the app.
Because you want to see the historical of this, and probably not only in production. I often say, like, hey, why don't you leave that synthetic running in QA pretest or whatever you want to call your pre-environments and see whatever the new release is injecting any new issues. That's another very valid that just bing, bing. And it you just mentioned like several variations or just G's scale for one, where I think many organizations are still like attached to this performance testing to be this single big event load test that we do, or one thing, where there are several approaches that we can and should be doing to assure good performance in our solutions, developments, or even environments that are already alive and about to receive a Taylor Swift. We should consider all those variations. And as well, I think the industry is not that aware of those different situations. You are not dressing the same for every life event, right?
Yeah, and in some cases, it becomes really, really simple. You can collect the information passively. So think about during a development unit test, you can collect information from logs and you can say,
some
okay,
RUM.
Are we passing? When you get to component assembly and pages, you can actually get the RUM data. So you don't even have to worry about a synthetic user. And at a certain point in the pipeline, when a test is complete, you can reach out to your APM collector and pull that RUM data back and say, okay, has it passed for one? And if not, you know, fail that test on a performance basis, even if it was functionally correct.
Most of the time, those things, I still get to some teams and wonder, like, how has no one catch this at the functional? Oh, because that's performance. We just waited for you to catch it.
Nobody asked. It was not their responsibility. And that's why having the passive overlay actually is quite powerful, because even during manual tests, you can start collecting data. And then you get to automated tests and you're getting any more data. And so now you're bringing in your Six Sigma, you know, green belt and black belt, and say, okay, how much data do I need to have a statistically valid data set to make a decision on quality related to performance? Now, we have an advantage because we have 100% sampling for whatever's going on. We're not 1 in 5, 1 in 10. You know, like a Toyota total quality management situation. So we have 100% samples, but we still need a sample set size before we can make a decision. But once you get that sample set size, you should be pinging back with dashboards almost every time or every day that you have an exception. And it is so much cheaper to fix these things if you catch a non-performing web service that's taking 1.5 seconds to respond at the unit test phase versus waiting all the way until it's time for performance testing for multiple users.
That's shift left, decrease costs, decrease our prices. And yep. I mean, and it's something that, funny, we still have to be reminding people, like, hey, why don't you check this before? Or it's wiser, right? Don't check the pressure on your tires when you are on the road, when it popped already. Check it before. It's way better, easier, cheaper, less tears, less suffering and blood. And speaking of some of the changes as well, I have been also talking often when I ping pong this with you. How much do you think lately, compared to before in the past, capacity testing? I have the BALT, BALT, big ass load tests that we used to execute.
Oh, the stress test, starting at zero and going to collapse.
Yeah. Do we still have to push our services? Like, how out of 100 tests that are being done in the world, how many of those should be these capacity tests?
That's a tough question, because every system has a different level of scalability, and not all systems are public. You've got a finite number of users. You have a finite amount of growth that's going to occur. And as long as you're accounting for that level of growth and some on top of it, you really don't need to do the stress test, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have systems... Let's pick on Ticketmaster. Let's say they're in the cloud.
Taylor Swift is our like
she's our latest performance goddess in this case for ability to crash a system. there is some value, I think, to the stress test in this case, because when you have 14 million sessions hitting almost immediately, even if you are in a cloud environment and you're thinking you're scaled appropriately because you've only sent out 1.5 million invitations, so you've warmed up all of your nodes in Kubernetes, and it's like, oh, I can handle that. Okay, you get your 14 million. How does your system respond in that case? And it's not going to be the traditional stress test where we're just going up, you know, one step every 1 minute, because the system is going to have a chance to respond in that case.
On testing types, what you're talking is more like a spike test, right?
I think it is. I think the traditional stress test that we've seen internally, when you go to the cloud, really becomes a point load or a spike test where you have all of these individuals arriving within a 2 to 5 minute window. Mm-hmm. We've certainly seen that for e-commerce providers where they have a spot sale and they get 300,000 people to show up to buy one of 500 items. So these types of events do occur. And it's worth noting, could you handle a 500,000 user show up or a 600,000? But how in the world do you anticipate multiple botnets coming together where you're anticipating 1.5 million and you get 14 million?
Mm-hmm.
At this point, Ticketmaster or any other ticket agency has really got to figure out their bot problem. How do they effectively identify bots and keep them from hitting the back end? Because that's really what's killing it for every other user in the system. And I don't know how they do that, because the marketing organizations are like, well, you might impact one real user. Well, if we don't, we're going to impact every real user.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I do agree bots add up a lot in those situations. But as well, you have some others where for real, you have the situation where a lot of users will be crazy about getting into your system. And bots aside, just real people will be bringing it down. We have the Black Fridays, which yep. also I won't say bots don't have anything to do there. Obamacare's, we have all those situations where...
Oh, yeah, that was just horrible design there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would dare to say not that much capacity testing, pushing the system to the limit, saying, or even performance. I don't think that thing was performant at all. But we always have these situations, Black Fridays, mm-hmm. end of deadlines, April 15 in the U.S. for the IRS systems.
Benefits election in the U.S. usually mm-hmm. is at the end of October. People wait until the very end, typically, to make their decisions. Just human nature. Yeah, all of these things have a very tight window and high load.
One that I would say probably won't give much time to the bots. Super Bowl ad. That's also
yes.
Surprise new product. Everyone on QR code. Okay, even easier, right?
That made it so easy. That's a show in and of itself on Coinbase.
And it's super important that on these situations, and I raised my voice there, we should still be doing this type of test, the traditional performance load testing that we love. And I call it a Stockholm syndrome, but it's awesome to do them. But what is the percentage of these tests around the performance tasks that are done around the industry? Because not everyone deals with Taylor Swift. Not everyone deals with these type of things.
So almost everyone who does performance assessing does a load test, which is mm-hmm. a specific number of users and transactions within a defined period of time. And they might do it projected out to 18 months of what they expect for their growth. Although I think that window is shrinking because of web deployments that occur almost daily mm-hmm. or even more frequently.
Some organizations are by the hour.
Yes, yes. Traditional stress testing for cloud-facing public applications, probably not so much. More stress testing. You have these other types of tests, these leak or soak tests. I think that's been replaced with more monitoring and production to see how resources are being used in a canary state, even after a traditional performance test. I think there's still a lot of value in doing those in the cloud, particularly since your cloud costs are tied to how you're using resources. If you have a memory leak over time that is constantly hitting the ability to add resources, it's going to cost you quite a bit.
You just blew my mind, because you are right. Nowadays, a soak test or endurance test may not be that needed anymore. That's a very good point, because, yeah, even as we release a new component, maybe that component is not even in the same server. That's or you can just monitor that single component and keep seeing what happens a long time. Every time that you new release, that little piece is rebooted or gets the memory cleared up. That's a very good observation. You just blew my mind. Probably endurance tests may be on the way out.
I mean, think about that from Kubernetes. Even if you have a really bad component that does have a resource leak, if it's able to shut that node down due to lack of use or load, then it's going to reset anyway. But if you have a core component that's always running, what's going to happen is you're going to constantly be adding new resources. If you turn on auto scaling, it's like, okay, I'm hitting my memory limit. Boom, hit auto scaling. I'm hitting my limit again after another couple of days. Boom, I'm hitting auto scaling again. And you may not even see that until you get your bill after a month. And that could be shocking.
No, and as you say, with decent or good APM and paying attention to it as well, you will notice that right away. Like, hey, this thing was taking like a fourth of the memory that is now. But as well, being now modular, being in the service and microservice type of solutions that we have nowadays, like fixing those situations will be like, okay, yeah, let's just focus on that little process that is the one that is causing these leaks or these situations. I think it's a little bit more granular and easy to pinpoint who is misbehaving than in the past, where we had to simulate everything. We had to, this application would not be alive or in production until a few months until we are done. And once it's in production, we didn't have any control afterwards. It was like, yep, you better get it right once, because we're not releasing again, or it will be a big event if we have to. You're right. This is changing a lot, at least on that type of testing, how we deal with things.
And that's why it's so very exciting for those people who truly are performance engineers. And I separate engineers from testers.
Testers, yeah.
On the use of data. So testers generate data. You know, they use a tool, they generate data. Engineers actually take data and analyze it and turn that into something actionable to improve performance. So for those of us who are truly engineers in the performance space, having access to data almost as soon as the first unit test is run, all the way through production, simply gives us many more opportunities to analyze and convert that analysis into a recommendation to improve the efficiency of the system, whether that's in the unit phase, component assembly, application
integration,
where the integration where the web pages are ready to go or other components are ready to go, in unit tests, in functional testing, automated functional testing, multi-user performance testing, all the way into production, and then taking that data and using it for capacity planning purposes as well. So we get a much broader life cycle of when we're available. We get a wider opportunity to actually use the data to convert it. I think it's a really exciting time to be working in performance, because we have an ability to generate so much value. And Leandro, you've done it yourself with K6 on an evangelical basis. You know, encouraging that adoption, encouraging some of these better practices, the integration with I think it's on the Grafana on the back end.
I think we both have promoted to get people liking more performance. But you're right. Yesterday, I already mentioned a little, we had an event here at Mexico City. It was more like a developer-oriented event. And I went and talked to a bunch of people. And it's super cool that some of the things that you're mentioning right now, when I was describing to some of them, yeah, I was trying to evangelize and, hey, we need performers. We need more good salary, good opportunities. If you are good, and most of the time, developers come with a good skill set that is useful in performance testing. And I was describing some of these things to analyze the data, to check the logs and see what service is being used the most or whatever. And many of them were raising eyebrows like, wait, but you're talking like business intelligence or what a business analyst would be doing, right? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Sometimes a performance engineer has to have the capacity to kind of understand.
We are the original big data people.
Uh-huh. Because to mold a good performance scenario, you needed to understand really what was happening on that application solution. Like, how many of these clicks translate into the backend events that I'm seeing that I need to simulate? How am I going to mold it? And they were like, so you need to understand the business to be a good performance engineer? And I'm like, yeah, you need to know what is happening and why does it matter? Is it like you're getting just a request to load test X component and you're like, but this is not even hit. The users hate it. They don't touch it or whatever. You end up knowing a little bit more about your users and probably I'm exaggerating that Mark Zuckerberg knows about people on Facebook, but it's aligned. You have to understand and know a lot about the system to be able to predict, simulate, give good insights, possible solutions. It's so deep, right?
It is very different. We wind up having a foot inside of business. We wind up having a foot inside of technology. If it's a game of Twister, we wind up having a hand inside of data analytics. And, hopefully that next hand that we have to place on user reporting doesn't cause us to tilt over.
Yeah, because that reporting as well, I remember, used to be a big headache. Nowadays, we have some solutions that make it easier. Not only shining out Grafana, but the Kibana, some other ANAs, or even Tableau or some things that we had at our disposition to kind of make it understandable to the business, because ironically, at times we were the ones that understood better what was happening in the business through these metrics. And like, hey, management, hey, C-level people, here is a report. And what we can do nowadays is like, hey, go and look at that dashboard so that you understand what is happening and why am I probably, as a performance engineer, bitching about so much or saying that.
I still deal with product owners who don't understand how their systems are being used.
What are and they the just most see you as Chicken Little processes. All the time running around, right?
And they're like, I don't understand how to give you data to do your performance test. So, okay, we go off, we collect data. And then we bring the data back to them and say, okay, what do I do with this? Well, you own this. You're the product owner. Set standards. Now that you know what it does, is this right for the business? And if not, educate the developers on what is correct for the business so they can build it. Because as you stand now, you may set a standard, 2 seconds. I'm the only one that has it as a performance tester or performance engineer. I'm going to go off and test it. None of the other people have had this, the architects, the developers, the platform engineers. I'm going to report back that it's broken, tell them their baby is ugly, and they're going to tell me my test is wrong. And they're not incorrect. They haven't had the benefit of that data. It was just pulled out of thin air as a requirement. And that's really not fair to them to be held to a standard they did not develop to.
It's interesting because on that, you also point out another skill of the performance engineer. Probably operations just gives networking reports or data transfers. I have seen some of the reports that come from other areas, IT, infrastructure, ops. And yeah, they are gibberish to management most of the time. And we performance engineers have to become like the doctor that says like, hey, you have this, this, and this, and your remedies are this. When you mentioned that many times they don't know what to do with that information, our role is to come with what is the medicine. As you very well said, you could do this, you could do that, you could do that other thing. And we can give this translation. We were, what's the name, the word for this, the liaison for this type of information, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge skill, and sadly, not many performance engineers have it. Like, put it, I have done that, like putting it in puppies and tacos and silly things that, how can I help you understand what is the situation here? Why am I so worried, afraid, or crying, or whatever, as a performance engineer? And you are just like my pet when I talk to, you know, spinning the head and like, what are you saying? I don't care about that. Why does this matter?
I have my puppy Zara next to me right now, and as I said her name, she looks up to me and she did exactly that. She's like, turned her head. Yeah.
Performance? What? Why do you care about that? I just want my. Are you bringing up the dog chow or whatever? That's what I matter. And funny enough, that's with some C level, what they care for, like numbers.
As performance folks, we really have an opportunity to do a couple of things. We can save you money. In terms of operations, less downtime,
several areas,
lower your support costs, lower your frustration. By the way, that frustration leads to employee turnover. If you're being asked to use tools to do a job, internal and tools. The tools don't support it,
and the cost of that is priceless.
Yeah, it's much easier to keep an employee than it is to go and get a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as effective, especially a long-term employee. We can improve your cloud bills in terms of that cost. We can improve your revenue, your conversion rate, by understanding end user behavior in an e-commerce environment. We can reduce abandonment in business processes. I heard a great example recently involving ePayStub. Everybody came to look at their pay stub on Wednesday night from all over the world, and it was really slow, and it didn't respond, and this made it into management meetings as escalation. Just fixing that issue gives management so much time back to deal with other things, and it also improves your relationship with your employees. Another example was an employee time card system and expense reporting system. People didn't like using it because it was slow. So they would avoid putting expenses in until the end of the quarter. That's a cash flow issue. So there's lots of ways we can tie it back to the business. And a good performance engineer and architect will be able to tie that back. So it's relevant and understandable to the business.
There are so many skills that, and I wouldn't say, yeah, it's good that you have a performance engineer with all those skills, but you can also spread and specialize on some of those areas. I think that
we're cheaper by the half dozen, mm-hmm. so that way you can get your mix of skills.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would say get a, I hate to use that word, but a full stack performance engineer would be. It's incredibly complicated. There are so many skills, and the organizations do not know it. And for that, I think that's our motto here at Pervites. That's what we are going to be helping people, and that's what we are going to be covering a little bit, I hope, more often.
Yeah, and actually, before we sign off, we should let people know, why is Mark not here? So we've had some changes over the last 4 months. Mark is going off and doing some of his own educational stuff. He is what you might call a Perf Bites emeritus. So we hope he shows up here on shows on occasion. But we'll be revamping the show lineup. You see that we've got this one that we just did. Perf Bites will become more of a core skill show. That is, if you want to know why it's important to know the client server model for performance testing, we'll cover that. What is think time? Why do I care? We'll cover that. The News of the Dam show will become a short segment show where you'll have one case that'll show up say for 5 to 15 minutes to be discussed, as and it'll be pushed out as a produced show instead of a live show. Of course, we have Leandro and the excellent work he's doing on Perf Bytes Espanol, and we're trying to encourage Henrik on, you know, Perf Bytes in French.
En français.
So we'll see how that works. And we're always looking for more interesting individuals to expand the Perf Bytes franchise. So if you're interested in doing a Perf Bytes in Hebrew or a Perf Bytes in Hindi, please reach out to us. You know, we'd be happy to have you as part of the family. I'm going to be guilting Leandro into his next version of his book for Agile. We'll see if we can't get that out this year. I'll have a revision of my book as well. And there are a few other books in the pipeline related to performance. So watch for those at Perf Bytes Press, probably towards the end of the year.
And if you have a niche for book creation, let us know.
Yeah, we're happy to help you out. We do have a security imprint as well. So if you want to write in the security space, we can support you as well.
And okay, so with that, let's start the ramp down. As Amigo James mentioned, we will be catching up, trying to, Perfect was running thin a little bit for a few months, but we're back. And some of the topics that we have been talking today, I'm going to give a little spoiler alert. Amigo James, I would like to talk next time, because it's a question that I get often from these new people that their eyes shine when I speak about the joys of the performance testing world. Mm-hmm. How and where should they start getting good at it? So I would like to have your perspective, have some other recommendations. If anyone wants to come and share that with us, also let us know. We can bring you in here to give some tips for the new people. We need new people. And we need you to come being good. As James mentioned, not just knowing or coming from some other area with a weird promotion that, no, let's get good. Let's get good skills and become good people in this area. What do you think?
I agree. I'm all for high value because, you know, here's the secret. If you produce a lot of value, your paycheck goes up.
Mm-hmm. You get I'm going to twist a little phrase. I think it was Benjamin Franklin. The more value I produce, the luckier I get. So yeah. that totally applies. All right. So everybody, we're back. We will be trying to be pushing more stuff. Stay tuned. And I would say happy Friday. Happy Friday, amigo James.
Happy Friday. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. And remember, whenever you run up against someone who's had a bad experience on a website, who's frustrated at internal performance, or a manager who doesn't quite understand why this performance thing is important, please tune them in to perfbytes.com and we'll be happy to help them understand.
Yeah. That's what we are here for, helping everyone to improve their performance testing practices. And with that, happy Friday, happy weekend, everyone. And Perf Bytes out. Adios, everyone.
Adios.